busy week here at the Behind the Counter offices. I'm kidding. I don't have an office. Do you guys like comics? Me too. Do you guys like vampires doing crazy cool shit? Me too. I hope you're reading Bloodstained Teeth Out from Image Comics. Volume 1 is already on the shelves, and Volume 2 is out in May. Earlier this week, the 10th issue dropped, final issue so far, and I got a chance to talk with co-creator and artist of the book, Patrick Reynolds. I cannot recommend this comic enough. Here we go. Hey guys, welcome to the show, Patrick Reynolds. Patrick, how are you today?
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, no, I just said, let's do this. This is my first interview after finishing Bloodstained Teeth last week. So got a lot of stuff we can talk about. Yeah, so let's fire away.
So you're one of my favorite artists working in comics right now. Let's get that out of the way first, because the rest of it is just going to be a very derogatory. No, I'm kidding. So yep. You're legitimately one of my favorite artists working in comics right now. I love Bloodstained Teeth. You said you just completed work on it, and this was a co-creation between yourself and Christian Ward, right?
That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Please go into it, man. I love the book, and you know I'm probably gonna fanboy out like a little bit on you, but like you know talk to me. Like,
so. Yeah.
Awesome.
One thing I noticed is that I'm also just as big as a fanboy as fans. Mm-hmm. You know, if we have time, I'll get into my first meeting with Dave McKean.
I would love to hear that.
Honestly, I think security might have been involved. I was such gushing over him so hard, but like, so Bloodstained Teeth happened. I mean, it's weird to think about it. Like, it happened. It started over 2 years ago, in January 2021. My gosh, yeah, it's weird to think about time frames. But Christian Ward was somebody that I had always admired. Of course, you know, his work on Odyssey and Invisible Kingdom. You know, in addition to everything else that he does. You know. Has always been something. It's always, you know, I look at him like I would look at like Bill Sienkiewicz or, you know, Dave McKean. You know, it's these artists who are just really awesome and you have no idea if they're ever going to interact with you ever. Mm-hmm. And so when Christian Ward looked me up on Twitter or sent me a DM on Twitter, he's like, hey, you know, I really appreciate your work. And immediately I was like, do you have the right Patrick Reynolds? You know, I didn't, you know, it's just, you know, when someone like that, you know, looks you up and seeks you out, it's always mind-blowing. And he said he had a bunch of ideas for stories and he would like to collaborate on something. And I said, you just tell me what to draw and I'll do it, basically. But he had shared a couple of other ideas before Bloodstained Teeth, but and I liked all of the ideas, you know. And but when he proposed Bloodstained Teeth, you know, I don't want to talk about too much about his process. But he said that he thought of the title first before anything else. Mm. And then he also, when he was thinking about the title, he thought like, okay, how do vampires fund, you know, living forever? They must be super rich, right? I mean, that must take a lot of money. And he thought like, you know, okay, you know, immortality must be pretty expensive. And so we thought vampires must be billionaires, right? And at the time I was like, you know, you had me at vampires, basically. Right. So, but then he started talking about like all this other, you know, social and economic context. And I thought, of course, right? Like, you know, vampires as billionaires, that's not too far from reality these days. So, he was just talking about like, you know, how about that idea. But then, you know, he started talking about the character of Atticus Sloane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said he's sort of like a David Bowie analog where he thinks of himself, you know, as somebody who's a lot cooler than he probably is. Not to say David Bowie is, but he fancies himself as like a David Bowie character where like he's sort of above on the cutting edge of fashion, but he's actually kind of like a couple of decades behind. And so he wears 70s outfits. He wears these huge collars and these colorful outfits, trying to figure out what cool is. Like he can buy his lifestyle, but he can't buy like coolness. You know, he seeks it out through musicians and through, 70s music and all these other things. Like he tried, you know, throughout the course of the series, you know, he's trying to buy that. He's trying to get that. He's always an outsider, He's not even a member of the firstborn elite that he's up against. He is a vampire, so he's not human, so he doesn't really belong anywhere. He's always like a misfit, but he's trying to use that coolness to fit in somewhere, you know. And I thought, geez, that seems like, you know, a pretty compelling character to bring to life. And then he started talking about the other characters, like, you know, Joey, his consciousness is like the Jiminy Cricket, if you will, of the story. And he's like, this character is his key to like not being basically a sleazy bastard. You know, it's like his, it's like, if there's anything good about Atticus, it's his friend Joey. And I thought, what a great character dynamic. And so I just started creating all of these character designs, you know, and looking up like analogs for them. Like, we thought about Robert Pattinson as an analog for Atticus Sloane. And then we sort of landed somewhere between Lucifer from Wicked and Divine and David Bowie during his then White Duke phase, you know.
Okay.
And Joey was sort of like, you know, the antithesis of that, like the surfer dude with the floppy hair, like Owen Wilson, like who really needs to start dieting, maybe, you know, is sort of like his look that we started going for. And then all the other characters sort of kind of begat like from them, you know, like those were our pillars, you know. And as we're going, you know, I thought like, okay, well, I'm really interested in having environments and settings be something that contribute to the story. Like when I was doing Joe Golem, like that unique setting was very important. Like that's not something that somebody had ever seen before. And so I was really conscious of creating like a setting that was also very important, you know? And so I thought, okay, we're like the seedy underbelly at street level of this world where vampires control everything. And so I thought, okay, we're gonna have to focus mostly on night scenes. So I started researching, of course, Blade Runner and Tokyo photography at night, and somehow, you know, trying to make that its own thing, but also make that a character. And of course, Heather Moore comes along and just, you know, melts my face with what she's doing and just emphasizes that in a way I've never seen before. And so her colors also become a character in the story along with the setting. And so I wanted people to be like, you know, have a very clear idea of where they are. You know, I wanted to immerse the reader in the believability of the story by making every, like, the environment, character, something that people can feel. You know, there's an element of humanity to everything, the textures, everything like that. And I wanted people to feel stuff. And so when Christian came to me, I, you know, my stuff is really gritty and street level. His stuff, like, belongs in the cosmos, right? Ghost Rider, Silver Surfer, Thor, all those kinds of things where you just have like these, you know, if Jimi Hendrix were to, you know, color a comic, it would probably be something similar to what Christian Ward would do. And I thought, like, how does how do our styles meet? And Bloodstained Teeth as a result, you know, like he thought that like the colors that Heather Moore was doing fit well because my stuff was so real and grounded that like both things emphasized each other, if that makes any sense, you know. So that's where that sort of synergy happened. And I just sort of, when I finished my stuff, I just let Heather Moore cook. You know, I'm like, you have these great ideas where there's like, you know, patterns and swatches and textures that I had never seen before. I didn't know what to think of it at first. I guess that's what people would probably react if they heard their if they were at their first Pink Floyd concert. Like you're experiencing some kind of cosmic revelation, you know,
where you can hear colors and all that stuff.
Exactly. Like, and I'd never seen coloring like that before. Usually the colors I work with are, you know, Dave Stewart and Lee Lowridge and Luis NCT. Colors do a little more, you know, realistic or sort of emphasize realism, and Heather Moore, which is on the other end of the spectrum. But, you know, the result was something that was completely unique. And, you know, I really have to credit Christian for seeing that first, or for having that idea in his head, because I never would have thought of that on my own. So anyway, so that's sort of like how it happened. And then like 2 years later, we have, you know, Bloodstained Teeth. So
it works. Yeah. The book has made it to the top of my stack every month that it's come out, to be honest. Like, and I, for me personally, like as a fan, like, and I've been reading comics since I was a kid, we're probably around the same age. So like that like I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned, that sort of like neo-noir style of that book combined with the concept was like an automatic home run for me, you know, like, because sometimes, like, as much as I like to flip through previews to order my books, I also enjoy the process of getting stuff sight unseen. And this is one of those books where I'm like, all right, I know these guys are going to be the creative team on this, and went to the store and flipped through that first issue and was like, you know what? This is this is an automatic home run for this guy, you know?
Yeah, that's super heartwarming. Thank you. I never know how people are going to react to stuff. Like, you know, I spent so many hours with the stuff 6 inches in front of my face, and I only see the mistakes, you know? I have no idea how people are going to react to it. You know, when issue one came out in April, last April, like, I had never had seen a reaction like that before to anything I'd ever done.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, well, even, you know, I've worked on Serenity and Aliens, and those fan bases are incredible. And I still get people talking to me about Serenity. You know, God, I love the Serenity fans. They're great.
That Serenity fan base is off the wall dedicated. Like, I don't think I've ever seen fans of that cat, like, in that cat. There's certain franchises where, like, Serenity's up there, and the Avatar Airbender folks are also, like, in that upper echelon of, like, they're lifers, you know?
Yeah, as they should be. I mean, the whole universe is terrific. When I had to do research for Serenity, like, I had heard of it, but I didn't know anything about it. I actually watched the movie first. And I remember liking the movie, and then I watched the TV series, you know, and it's unfortunate how that played out, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the first episode got mixed up with the second one, and, you know, but the characters, you know, that, like, intrigued me. And, like, when I was taking writing classes and when I was going to the Savannah College of Art and Design, like, that's what we focused on, is Robert McKee's story, where it focused on, like, characters are important when they make choices and decisions. And that's what makes all my favorite characters in comics, like, or in TV, and like Ellen Ripley in Aliens, you know, it's about the choices she has to make, you know. And I'm watching The Last of Us right now, you know, I've never played the game, but, like, the choices those characters have to make, you know, was what makes them interesting. And so, like, okay, well, that kind of, those choices, that humanity is something, like, I really want to focus on. So I don't know if I answered your question, but, but you know, it's really, like, I haven't, and Christian was just, you know, he's been, this is not his first creator owned series by a long shot, you know, and he would just send me a message saying, hey, enjoying your buzz. I'm like, is this what buzz is? I guess so. I mean, I've never felt it before, you know? And, you know, when I hear people talk about, it's interesting, like, hearing people tell me how they react to it, you know, in my head, I want to tell them, you know, you understand, like, I wish I could have drawn this better. I wish I could have done this. But in my head, like, I'm like, don't ruin their experience, man. Just let them tell you how a comic you made them feel. That's why you do this. is to change the way people perceive the world, you know. And I'm very lucky that I get to do that every day, you know. So yes,
that's awesome. It's like being in a band too, where, like, you're the only one who knows the notes that you didn't hit, you know, like, you're, because in your head it's, you know, like, and that's, but that's a credit to you as an artist, because, like, you're obsessive over your own work. It's your baby. You don't want to phone anything in, so that's, I commend that, you know. But you mentioned before that you're done with Bloodstained Teeth. Is it over? Was it a finite story to begin with, or was there room to, is this volume one and then a possible volume two might happen?
I think it's sort of like Christian, to my knowledge, he always sort of planned it as a series that would go to a finite amount of issues. Now, so it changed a little bit. Like, we wanted to start out with, like, a 5-issue arc, you know, and then maybe, but then I think he just, you know, as he was writing, he just had so many directions and things he wanted to include that it expanded. And I was like, sure, let's do it. We did talk about, like, doing some, like, there's so many opportunities to do spinoffs with, the series. Like, issue 9 comes out tomorrow, and there's a character in it called Vamp Man that I would like to, you know, that would, who was a vampire who was, like, you know, because he's now a vampire, he thinks he's a superhero. We can turn that into be a superhero. And I had, you know, I referenced Batman 1989 for the first two pages, my favorite Batman movie. Well, close, you know, it was the first Batman movie I ever saw that I loved. We'll put it that way. And, you know, I thought, God,
Okay.
every character here could be, you know, have their own series. And
absolutely.
So,
I'd be on board for the Bram Stoker series.
Yeah. I mean, like, not to tell you how it all ends and that kind of thing, but like, you know, I think, you know, we did talk about, you know, moving on and stuff like moving on to other things, you know, and there was a possibility in the future, but I think for right now, just because, you know, like I know Heather Moore has got other projects she wants to do. And I think like she is so integral to this process or to the story that like, you know, we decided to, you know, just to sort of put it on the shelf, you know, for and maybe we'll come back to it later. Maybe not. We won't. But like, but if we do know that like other characters, you know, there are so many other angles we can explore, but for right now it's going to be on the shelf. Like I definitely need a, like a break from it, you know,
I'm sure,
I love working on it, you know, it's just, it's a very labor intensive process, you know? And so I wanted to do like some, other, some of like smaller things too, but like, gosh, you know, I really think that I miss drawing the guy. We'll put it that way, even though he's a vampire bastard, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
After, especially after drawing the last issue and how it all wraps up, like I'm like, God, this is. It was just so well written, and it was just so well contained. After it finished, you know, I thought like, man, even if we do leave it, it's still a very incredibly satisfying arc of everybody here, you know, not going to say how it ends, of course, but like, it could very well, you know, it could work any direction we want to go, but for right now it's going to be, it's on the shelf for a minute, but hopefully, you know, we'll see.
You never know. I think the book would lend itself, again, this is me, my own personal fanboy stuff. I feel like that the whole, if it's collected, it would lend itself very well to like a museum quality type packaging, you know, because I would love to see like your preliminary sketches, or even like if Christian sent you stuff or things like that, you know, like just because I, you know, like you guys, it seemed like you just reading the book, it seemed like you guys meshed extremely well together.
Yeah, I thought we did too. Like, you know, there were a couple of times where, you know, after the initial character designs and that kind of thing, like he just sort of let me go on and do, you know, what I thought might be best. And there were a couple of times where, you know, particularly with the Pensmiths that you probably saw in issue 7 when they first came around, like we both decided we really wanted to nail that character, or those people. They have a very specific look. And so we passed around at designs back and forth. Like I would draw, you know, a concept sketch, and he would sort of modify it a little bit, and then we'd go from there. But yeah, for the most part, like, you know, we really didn't, like, there were a couple of things we had to, like a couple of tweaks we had to change, but for the most part, like, you know, we sort of let each other just do our things. I think, you know, we both realized that like what ends up on the page is totally different than like we as individuals probably had in mind, but the most important thing is like what we came up with together, you know, how it evolved into a thing that's completely on its own. And like I was used to doing things more, you know, more realistically and that kind of thing, and so as the series went on, I knew kind of what Heather would what would do. And so like sometimes I would leave panels a little bit more open for her, do like, you know, these really cool textures and stuff like that in the background that, you know, that my inks cannot capture, you know, I can only go so far with black and white. So I would sort of like leave a bit of room for her to like, you know, hey, you know, I know she's probably going to emphasize the, when this character jumps through the window. And so I'm going to like, probably not to put too much detail there, you know? And so I think we just sort of like left room for everybody to do their thing, because we knew when everything was done, it would be like the whole would be the most important thing. It's sort of, you know, I always make this analogy that, you know, I know that people have listened to me interview before or are used to me saying this, but it's like, you know, I love John Coltrane so much, and I love jazz so much, particularly in the 1950s and 60s. And you can hear it, but that's all about listening, and it's all about like collaborating on stage, like live, right? And like Miles Davis would, you know, plays muted Trump in A Kind of Blue, then he would back up and let Coltrane do his thing. Then he'd hear the drum fill in, and then, but everybody sort of knew what time it was to come back together and make a song, you know? And so there was this synergy, you know, and sometimes I get really selfish. I get really precious about me, because I'm like, I don't want anybody messing with this. It's a cool thing, so I just threw, but then I thought, you know, like, No, let people make this thing bigger than what you are, and you're a part of this, and it's not yours. You know, it's hard for me to, you know, I spend so much time on this stuff, you know, that I've actually learned with Blessing too, is to not let it be, you know, so precious to me, because when everything is done, it's really cool, you know, and I'm just a part of it. So that's,
and you know, it's going to be cool too. You know, it's not like you're going to do something and then this team in particular is going to give you a dud at the end of the day. You know, it's going to be, it's going to be a home run. I want to talk about your art style a little bit. Cause to me, I'm a big fan of your art style. I see a little bit of Michael Gatos in there. I see some Lee Weeks in there. I see some Alex Malliam in there. Yeah, yeah.
I'm honored. My gosh.
You know, there's I'm a big nerd, so like I'm gonna throw those names out at you. What were some of your influences? You know, and like, and I'm gonna piggyback on that a little bit with. Your bio says that you started in 2009 and left your old life behind. So let's talk about the art influences and then just jumping into comics.
Yeah. When I was about 17, my God, I hate to start things like that, but really I went to a comic shop when I was 17 after my art teacher told me to go look up. I mean, I love comics, you know, when I was a kid, but I think the first comic I ever bought was the Dark Horse Presents Aliens. Series, but that's when they came out in like newsprint, you know, with that beautiful Bernie Wrightson cover of that alien. Yeah. That was the first comic I bought. And then I think it was Terminator Secondary Objectives. You know, because I love the Terminator, I love aliens. Those were my gateways into these things. Then they became, and then I thought, oh, they're also comics. Wow. And you know, I wanted to draw comics, but I didn't know, like, instead of just drawing cool pictures of Terminators battling aliens, you know, my art teacher was like, can you tell a story though? That's what you need to think about, is like, lots of people can draw, but think about sequences and stories and telling stories with pictures. You should look up Arkham Asylum by Dave McKean and Grant Morrison. I'm like, really? Yeah, yeah, man, the Joker's just grotesque, man. My teacher was a little bit of a hippie, but like he was, he understood that, like, you know, there's a difference between someone who wanted to draw cool stuff and someone wanting to like tell stories. And he thought that I needed to learn how to tell stories very astutely. And so when I saw Arkham Asylum in Comics Utah in Salt Lake City, where I grew up, I opened it and the first page was like a bat fossil. And I'm like, what? And then every page was painted, but not painted. There were like nails and burlap glued into the surface of things on top of like Joker, who was based off a Punch and Judy doll. And I thought, what in the world? And I couldn't even read the Joker's fonts, you know, it goes into the Joker having multiple personalities and, you know, but him sort of, and then out the whole Alice in Wonderland allegory. I'm like, this is a comic. And I immediately went home and started drawing Batman like that. You know, I'm this is like, I know aliens are great and cool. And I bought a couple of X-Men comics, you know, but like, this is different. This like makes me look at comics a different way. And I wanted to draw that, you know, I all the books that I was assigned to read in high school, like Grendel by John Gardner and like Crime and Punishment, I would do in comic form. I wanted to like realize stuff in ways that made sense to me that I thought were interesting. And unfortunately, like my parents were like, you really need health insurance, pre-existing conditions, you know? So, doesn't look like you can make a lot of money drawing comics. Why don't you start teaching, you know, that way you can do your art in the summer and then, you know, have health benefits, that kind of thing. And so I actually went to school at Utah State University and got a degree in illustration, you know, spent a lot of time with wildlife painters and and people drawing, you know, beautiful portraits of women playing instruments in fields, which were beautiful. But I was like, and I'm over here drawing Batman as if he were a Christ figure. No one cares about that, you know, like, especially in Utah. I mean, come on. Yeah. Like I was just this weirdo from space in my art classes. And, you know, but then I realized after a couple of years, I'm like, no, you need to learn how to paint and draw first. You know, you got the idea, sure, but learn technique learn how to be taught. And so I got a teaching degree, you know, and I went to teach in Las Vegas. And After like 3 years, I thought, this is not where I need to be. I have an incredible amount of respect for teachers and the teaching profession, but like I was exhausted. I was 24 years old and I was miserable. My hair was falling out and the best part of my week was going home on Friday and going to the bar to forget about it. You know, I'm like, this is not what I need to be doing. And so I just said, all right, let's give art a try. And my dad was like, you know, who would suggest that I teach because I need to have the health benefits. He felt so bad. He's like, here's what you do. Why don't you try plan A? You know, why don't you actually do this? And I thought, okay, so I'm gonna have to make time to do it. So every day after school, I would go home and draw a page in my sketchbook. I would just do it. And you know, no matter how tired I was or whatever, you know, exhausted, instead of like being miserable and falling asleep watching Golden Girls on Tuesday night, I would say, draw a page, you know, and that I started drawing in my sketchbook and it turned into a graphic novel about my biological father, you know, who was not a really big part of my life. And I thought, okay, well, I'm doing something that means something to me. And I think I have a lot to learn, but like, this is, I want to keep doing this, you know? And I, and I don't know how this happened, but like in high school, I applied to go to the Savannah College of Art and Design. I couldn't go because it was too expensive. I had other brothers and sisters in college and I had to go to a state school, Utah State, you know, because it was just way too expensive, even though I applied to SCAD. And like after my third year of teaching, somehow SCAD found me in Las Vegas. I don't know how, they got some weird black ops stuff going on. Like, and they sent me a postcard in the mail when I was living in Las Vegas saying that, you know, we're recruiting for graduate school, you know, you should apply. And I even scoffed at it. I even called my dad and I was like, my dad is my stepdad, but I called him my dad, you know? And he's like, I was like, you know, they want me to draw funny books for money. Can you believe? He's like, you need to go. I've seen how happy you are when you draw this. I've seen like how miserable you are when you don't. You need to see what they have to say. And I'm like, okay, sure. And I took this graphic novel about my biological father and showed them to, I put on a tie, got my portfolio together and went to this meeting at the Hampton Inn in Las Vegas. And there was an animation professor who was looking at my portfolio. He's like, okay, I think you can probably go here and be successful after, you know, you learn how to tell a story and that kind of thing. I think you have some potential. I'm like, okay. And so I told my parents, I'm like, they think maybe I could do this. And they're like, well, we think you can. My parents had a lot more faith in myself than I did, we'll put it that way. And so SCAD sent a professor from their sequential art department just to talk to me like a month later, just to look at my portfolio. It was Ray Gatto, who was still there. And he looked at my portfolio and he's like, yeah, you should apply immediately. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you know, storytelling, you got to work out, but you can learn that, you know. But so I did. And I applied for the MFA program and I was riding home from work one day, again, exhausted as hell. And I was listening to Tina Turner full volume, you know, just to like drown out what was happening.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, Tina Turner's version of Simply the Best at full volume will vanquish evil. Let me, oh my God.
100%. 100%. I sing that at my wife more often than you would think.
Oh my God. God bless you. Because like beautiful song, that and Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Oh, that was my coffee for the day. Cause I can't drink caffeine. Yeah. And I was driving home and I think Tina Turner was playing in the background and SCAD called me when I was driving home and they're like, hey, this is Patrick. And I'm like, yes. They're like, we want to offer you a full fellowship for the MFA program.
Wow.
And I think at the same time I was, over the radio, I heard Simply the Best. And I'm like, you're kidding. I almost crashed the car.
Oh my God.
And they're like, are you okay? We hear sirens. I'm like, no, I just almost crashed my car, but thank you. It's fine. And so what happened was I told my parents, they're like, okay, well, put your house on the market. We'll be down there in a week and we'll drive you to Georgia to go learn how to draw comics. I'm like, really? Like, yeah. So, and I, you know, this is in 2008 during the housing crisis. I had to let my house foreclose because I couldn't sell it. But we literally packed all of my stuff in a trailer, which was a TV with a VCR in it, a VHS copy of Fight Club and a typewriter and I think a futon. And we drove from Las Vegas to Savannah, Georgia to start my life over at age 29. So I can learn how to draw comics. And I don't know how many parents would tell their children to do that, but mine drove me there. So
that's awesome. That's a great story. And like, yeah. You know, God bless supportive parents, man. That's phenomenal.
They so were. And at a time where I think they just felt really bad that, like, you know, that I was so miserable, and they had sort of like pushed me into that place, you know, and they thought like, no, why don't you try plan A? You can figure this out. We'll figure this out. You know,
that's great. And
and luckily, before my, I was only there for 2 years. You know, in the middle of my second year, we had editor's day, and I showed my stuff to Chris Warner at Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. And then, I kept emailing him back and forth, and I still wasn't, you know, getting any work. I was getting very nervous. I'm like, I have to go back to teaching. And finally, like, I just started emailing Duncan. I emailed Duncan Figueredo, who was doing Hellboy. Mm-hmm. And Duncan, who is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And he sent my work to the editor-in-chief at Dark Horse at the time. And the next day, that editor got back and he said, would you like to discuss projects? I'm like, absolutely. And then started with an 8-page story in MySpace Presents called What Should I Find There, which was Dr. Brooms, who was Hellboy's father. Mm-hmm. It's his first paranormal adventure, you know. And then after that, I got Age Safety and the Haunted Boy, and then, you know, everything kind of grew from there. So yeah, you know, I was very fortunate to like get that work, you know, and it was, that's not something that is typical. But you know, I also knew that like I had to put myself in a position to be fortunate too. So there's no day that goes by that I'm not incredibly thankful for what I do. And, you know, and now I get to work with people like Christian Ward, you know, so it takes time, but like, that's sort of, you know, like, you know, I always, when I post my work on Instagram, I always put hashtag trust the process, because it is, mm-hmm. It is absolutely a process. And, you know, all of those hard things are part of it too. So, yeah.
That's a great story. I feel like, you know, everybody who I've talked to doing the show, has had such a wildly different story of how they got into comic books, you know, and it's never the same for any two people. Now, like a question about just the moving around, like, what was that like moving from Utah to Las Vegas? Like, you don't really make that that's not something you would think of as like,
no,
like a move, you know. So like, what was that like going from Utah to Vegas, and then from Vegas all the way to the East Coast to Georgia, you know, because they're three wildly different cities, you know?
Yeah. And then to Portland.
Portland, Oregon. Yeah. So
where I am now, you know, it's sort of like, it's weird because like, I've never, after college, I was never really settled. I've never, you know, until I moved to Portland, I never spent more than 3 years in any one place. Mm-hmm. But you know, it wasn't like I wasn't dissatisfied somewhere. That's just where the path took me. Like, I needed to go to Las Vegas for the job. I needed to go to Savannah for, you know, mm-hmm. art school. I needed to go to Portland, you know, to be around this incredibly vibrant comics community here. Like Dark Horse is here. Image Comics is now here, and Oni Press was here, you know, before the Line Force thing happened. And there's just so many people who just settle down here. It's here or LA, I think, that was probably one of the most visible communities on the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, but I like Portland because it was closer to home, you know, but also like I, you know, just have a lot of friends that were already here. And so I thought, why not? You know, it's interesting because like the only thing that actually has been with me through the entire thing is this drafting table right here.
Oh, wow.
that I'm sitting on. It was made in the 1940s. My dad picked it out.
Very cool. My
dad picked it out at like Goodwill. And it was like $30, but like it is the size of a battleship. Like you couldn't set it on fire, you know.
I can imagine. Yeah. Old school, like giant. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, and all these marks and stuff like that looks like a Jackson Pollock painting, you know. When I sit down, I know a process is happening. you know?
Yeah, yeah.
My brain and my body like conform to like this, you know. And as we'll get to the, like why that is something that is been, you know, something is something that a girlfriend just came home. Sorry.
No worries.
Why that is something that is actually starting to affect my health, actually. You know,
oh, as really?
Yeah, like there are months that go by where I, you know, just because I switched to digital during Bloodstained Teeth because like I needed to, I was just taking too much time, you know, and I needed to find a way to get things done faster, but also be a person. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning that process, you know, and it's easy, you know, to, I don't have to talk myself into this job, but it's so easy to like, you know, start working when the sun comes up and look up and 5 hours have gone by and you don't even know, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, as I get older, you know, I'm 44 now, like that stuff takes a toll on your body. And, it's difficult. Like now that I, you know, I'm in a committed relationship, like, you know, I noticed that like, I cannot sustain like working for, you know, months at a time with a few days off. Like I think since November 11th, I think I had 4 days off, you know, and it's not because like, you know, I'm being pushed to do this just because like, this is how long the process takes for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, drawing digitally was sort of an effort to expedite this whole and streamline it, you know, and Christian would, the whole time Christian was like, I'm trying to get you to like, not cut corners, but to like streamline your process. So he actually pushed me to do this. He's like, I'm worried about you, actually.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah. He was very concerned about it. He was like, you know, you know, cause I have some medical issues that need like managing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if I take a day off to go to the doctor, that means I have to work extra hard the next day.
Right. Right.
So I can't sustain that, you know, but it got to a point where I got it drilled in my head when I was in art school saying like, okay, you know, you need to be dependable. You need to have editors depend on you and you need to show them that you can finish things and that you're committed, because finishing things in comics is probably the most important thing you can trait that you can have besides drawing well, you know. Being able to finish stuff is like paramount, and there's a lot of people who can draw who can't get things done. And so I, you know, got that in my head and I was just so conditioned to it that like all that health and personal stuff like was just sort of always pushed to the corner. When I was finishing Bloodstained Teeth, it just sort of got to a point where I'm like, I cannot do this over and over again. Like,
yeah.
And I have to like work against I have to work against what's in my heart sometimes, you know. I have to let it go for a day, you know, and I have to like not put as much detail into this skyscraper, you know, even though I want to so bad. It's hard to do that, but like I've been looking at artists like Sean Phillips and Edmund Baker, especially Pulp. Christian actually gave me a copy of Pulp for my birthday. He's like, look at this. See, you know, like, you know, this stuff is really simple, but it's very effective. Look at this stuff, you know. He's always thinking about stuff like that, you know. So, but yeah, I know that's a long way around of saying like, you know, again, this is all part of the process too.
Yeah, for sure.
Look at Mike Mignola's work. His stuff was pretty realistic, but as he got farther and farther along with Hellboy, he was able to say so much with showing not a whole lot of art.
And yeah.
You know, and I thought, okay, well, there's a reason. Like, and that's what makes it so effective. He doesn't have to do that. You know, like he is so effective at reducing things to such simple and dynamic things that, like, you know, I hope I get there one day is what I'm telling you.
I mean, there's a lot to be said in, I think, modern comic book storytelling where less is more, and it works for certain artists. Like Mignola is, he, like, less is more works for him very, very well. Like that, I don't know if you picked up his, the book that I believe was released post pandemic where it was just like single page sketches.
Oh yeah. I think I followed those on Instagram. I don't think I have the book, but yeah, I think I've seen that work from that period.
But those are perfect examples of his work where it's like less is more. I think Pulp, it's funny that you brought that up, because I was just thinking about that book today. That's the only graphic novel I read back to back in one sitting, you know, like in the last like few years.
Great story. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also like, you know, that less is more approach works, and but depending on the artist, you know, because sometimes less is more with certain artists. You're like, well, you should have done the more. Sometimes. But, you know, so you transitioned from traditional like pencil and paper to digital. What are you using for digital? Are you iPading it? Do you have a tablet? Like what are you doing with that?
I still do the pencils traditionally because they're just contour lines. You know, those don't take very long, but they still have to compose the panel, you know, and at some point you still have to draw things, you know?
Yeah.
And so my girlfriend actually, who was also an artist and who works digitally and traditionally, but she's, you know, she uses Photoshop a lot, but she also uses an iPad, and she introduced me to Procreate on an iPad.
So awesome.
And yeah. And I was like, and I, of course, I'm such a purist that I was like, oh, well, I'll have nothing to show. I'm done. It's, I'm drawing on glass. You know, I'm a traditionalist. I need to feel the paper, you know, and I do, but at the same time though, I need sleep, and I need to like be with my girlfriend, you know, I need to be a person. And so it was a process, and you know, she will be happy to tell you that it was like, I am a glacier. I do not change quickly. But when I do move, it's, you know, it takes a minute, but
it's right into the hull of a ship.
You know, I can sink ships, you know, or not, you know, nobody on them, of course, but like, but that's just how I've always been, is like, you know, I find something that works and I try to do the hell out of it. And so traditionally was working from an artistic standpoint, but not from, you know, a person standpoint and a deadline standpoint. And so as much as I resisted, I knew I had to do it. And so I just, every once in a while, like I would try a panel digitally, like issue 4 of Bloodstained Teeth is where I started doing that, where Christian took over for a minute with the art duties. And we had to transition our work together. You know, we had to like do a couple of panels where they would transition into his colors, you know, from my inks. And so he helped me make room for that, you know, and I was like, he was like, what do you think about doing digital stuff? And of course I would, you know, be really resistant to it, but then I was like, you know, I have a day off. Let me try to do this panel traditionally. Cause I was really worried that it would look like it was digital. That was the thing, is like, I wanted to make it look like it was still drawn, you know, and there's a lot of digital artists whose stuff doesn't look like they drew, but it's still beautiful. But that's sort of, I wanted to make things look like it was done by a person, by a person and not a machine. And so I was really worried that like digital stuff would not afford that. And then, you know, I found Procreate. I'm like, oh, I found a couple of brushes that were close to the dry brush stuff that I draw.
And
the person on Instagram turned me on to the Rusty Nib brush set from True Grit ink supply. And there's, you know, the whole brushes are based on like, you know, gritty dry brush things. And I found like about 6 different brushes that I thought would replicate pretty close to what I was doing with my Raphael Series 8404 sable brushes in my crow quill pen. And it worked out. And, you know, sometimes I would test it on Twitter. I'd be like, okay, one of these is traditional, one of these is digital. Which one is which, everybody? And people were like having a hard time with it. They're like, I think it's this one. I'm like, okay, so if they can't tell, that's okay. And then Christian was like, I can't tell the difference between what you're doing here on Procreate and what you're doing traditionally. I'm like, okay, if he says it, then I think I'm okay. So, and that's how our hat started. And I had finished issue 9 and 10 all digitally, you know. And I get worried that, like, you know, people, you know, who look to buy originals and want to see originals, you know, I worry about denying people that. But at the same time though, you know, I have Bloodstained Teeth was over 200 pages, and half of that, at least half of that to 2/3 of it is still traditionally, you know,
I
have plenty of traditional stuff to go back on if I need to, but you know, this is stuff that I need to finish so I can go and take a break and be a person.
And listen, you could say, hey, listen, I don't have the originals for this, but I could send you or make you a beautiful Giclée lithograph.
Yeah. And a lot of people are doing that. Like, I'm with my art rep, Bob Schott Comic Art House, has a lot of artists he represents, and Yannick Paquette is one of them. And he makes, you know, just really awesome single prints of a page, just one print, I think, you know, and he sells those for, you know, a comparable rate to an original page. And, you know, I know that, like, I was at Rose City this year, and I heard people talking about that. You're like, you know, I went to, you know, some artist's table, and they don't have any traditional stuff anymore. It's kind of a bummer. And I thought, yeah, I can see why they would think that, because, like, you know, a print is a lot different than, you know, a thing where you can actually see the whiteout. You can see the salsa stains in the corners of your page, right? And there's a couple of pages on Aliens that did they actually have my blood in them. You know, I'm not very, I'm a little shaky with an X-Acto knife, and actually there is some blood over the ink there. There's something very Viking about that, you know? So, but if artists are like, you know, doing things that look just like traditional things, and if the process is just as, you know, thoughtful, and sometimes even as labored as a traditional thing, like, you know, I'm okay with that. You know, and plus I have so many other, you know, I'm not going to sell 98% of my original pages anyway, and so I have plenty of those to show people as well, you know. But yeah, so it was just a necessary thing, and I, you know, I'm still like going, man, I wish I would have done that page traditionally. Then again, like, I'm happy to go to bed at 9 p.m. and not 1 o'clock in the morning. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. It's better for you in the long run, you know, because you're saving, getting older, got to protect those joints, you know.
You do. And I mean, you have to, I sit on a saddle chair that's used by doctors and tattoo artists now, not because it's super comfy, but it's because, like, I don't want my back to disintegrate into sawdust, you know, when I'm you know, but I've gone to the emergency room. You know, because I've worked too many hours. In 2013, I had to go to the emergency room when I was doing Exile to Babylon and City of Roses back in the day. Like, I just, my body was like, yeah, we're going to start bleeding for no reason. I'm like, okay. So I was sitting down and working too much. Like, you know, it's difficult. Like, I try to listen to lots of people about these kinds of things now, like Shonda Rhimes is somebody I listened to during her TED talk. You know, she's you know, Shonda Rhimes is responsible for so many TV shows as a writer, as a producer, and her TED talk, she talked about that. She talked about, like, you know, just how hard it is to stop working. And she said that if you get the chance to do the thing you've always wanted to do, you'll do anything to be the best at it, anything, and you will push anything out of the way to get there, because you know how hard you had to work. You know how precarious the whole situation is. And I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, that's it, you know, but I can't do anything if I'm dead.
Right, so, right. Yeah.
And so she just started saying, like, I'm going to make time to do 15 minutes. I'm going to play with my kid, you know, and, you know, and I still forget stuff like that. When I was finishing Bloodstained Thief, you know, God, you know, my girlfriend was like, hey, let's go take a walk. Mm-hmm. You know, let's, why don't we watch John Oliver together? And I'm like, okay, you know, and still that was not a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But we have a 13-year-old Chihuahua who needs to go outside 4 times a day, and so that was the only chance I got to see the sun sometimes. But it's really nice to have a partner too that's there to remind you of what you're missing out on, and all your labor is actually affecting. It's not just myself anymore.
Absolutely.
You know? People in my life, you know, important people in my life miss me, and I miss them. So, but, you know, hopefully, you know, like, I learned a lot with Bloodstained Thief and how to streamline things. Christian really helped me out with that and how to think about things in a way that's not so labored anymore. And I really think that I'm a better artist for that. And I am grateful for the things he's taught me, you know, and to how to look at things in a way like that, you know, because he does like 3 or 4 projects at a time. You know, and he's like, he was telling me, like, yeah, I got 42 pages to do by lunch. And I'm like, really? Yeah, he'll get it done too. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I spent 3 days on this one establishing shot that people are going to read for a couple of seconds. I think my priorities are a little mixed up. So anyway, but that's a long way to say, like, yeah, it's comics are fun and cool.
How long is this break? Like, when's the next thing gonna kick up? Are you gonna just enjoy your time and take, like, light work here and there?
That's kind of the approach right now. I know for a fact that you know, I have a variant cover to do for a DC Comics, and which I'm very excited about. And you know,
can you talk about what it is or no?
I think I can say, like, it's for I can't say anything. I can't say too much about it other than it's, like, you know, one of their main characters. So I have to be careful. I've never done a cover for the big two before. And, you know, Dark Horse and Image, of course, you know, but So I'm gonna, you know, I but I have, you know, I have plenty of time to make that happen. And you know, Christian's been talking to me about stuff, you know, the next thing and that kind of thing. And I really want to take a break from interiors because I'm really tired, you know,
Okay. Yeah.
because I love doing them, you know, as much as I love blood stained teeth, you know, I'm pretty tired. And I just want to, you know, I have Emerald City coming up in the first week of March. And I love that sort of pieces. It's my favorite show ever.
I hear that. I hear that from everybody who tables there.
So it is such a comic artist or a comic creator friendly show. I love it.
Yeah.
I've gone there every year since 2011, with the exception of the pandemic, you know, you know, when they had to cancel it. I'm going this year for the first time in 3 years, and I'm looking forward to it. And so, like, I love doing commissions for people because I get to do what I want, you know, and I get to do.
Right.
Someone will say, like, I love it when people say, like, can you pick me, just pick between Iron Man and Enchantress? I'm like, okay, why not both? You know, and I get to work on, you know, I get to paint Iron Man, you know, for somebody. And that's a great palate cleanser, you know, for whatever the next thing is, you know. But I also know that, like, if I wanted to, you know, I could talk to Christian about the next thing, and he's already got like four or five already. He's like, how about this? Let's talk about it, you know. And in fact, after I talk to you, I'm going to talk to him about, you know, another thing. So,
Awesome.
yeah, anyway, so.
That's awesome. I feel like also, you know, like right like now, from what I've gathered and from whom I've talked to, the commission market is booming for
Really?
everybody. Yes, like I got a couple of buddies who are full-time artists, and they're like they'll text me and say like, "Yeah, like thank God I opened," because they were like one guy in particular. I'm not gonna name names, but he was very much like, I've refused to do commissions for years, and it was a mistake because as soon as he opened them, it was like 24 orders in like a day, basically. For, and like he's not charging like a pittance, you know. Like obviously, you
I
know, you
was the
have your
same
rate,
though.
everybody has their rate, you know.
Yeah, I was the same way. I thought of commissions as people wanting me to draw their dog or something. And so I was like, oh, I thought I was above it somehow. You know, but then, like, when I first moved to Portland in 2011, you know, like, I was between jobs. You know, this is right after I finished Abe Sapien, and right before I started City Roses and Exile Babylon. I wasn't working. I was really nervous. I'm like, what do I do? And so I just started doing fan art, like, of things every day. I was like, all right, it's Iron Giant Day. I'm going to do an Iron Giant thing. And
Sweet.
I would. And back when I had Facebook, I would post on Facebook just to, like, see what people thought. And people started offering to buy stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, today's going to be Iron Man. And people would be like, oh, how much? And I would be like, I would price things like Rain Man would say numbers like, yeah, about $100. That's seriously what I would tell people. I had no idea how to price. I still don't know how to price my work. I always, you
It's
know, Bob,
tough.
it is, you know, like and Bob Shaw, my art rep, God bless him, he's doing the Lord's work. He's trying to get me to charge more because, like, I just don't know how much my work is worth. Like, I will, as many hours as I spend on these things, I don't know if you can actually put a price on it, you know? And so I might as well just be like, pay me some cookies, you know? I don't care, you know? To me, like, the most important thing is the chance to just do this stuff, right? And, but now, like, hope Bob is very, very good about, like, saying, okay, you should be charging this, you know, and I'll kind of meet him a little lower than that, you know, which frustrates him, you know, but I'll be like, okay, maybe I'll bump those sketch cards up a little bit, you know, because I still want people to afford $60 versus like a $600 original page. I still want people to be able to have those options too, you know, but I also just like, you know, doing a little sketch card and spending a couple of hours on it, like, you know, just to see, like, do I like drawing this character? Do I actually, you know, what would it be like? And, you know, of all the Batman ones, I'm like, okay, yeah, I still like drawing Batman. So
Oh, for
can
sure.
confirm, you know, but I, you know, commissions keep me afloat when I'm not, you know, on other jobs. Like during the pandemic, that's what kept me alive, you know, or kept me financially stable, is just being able to do, just turn to my art rep Bob Shaw, just open up commissions for a couple of days, and, you know, thankfully, you know, people respond very well to those. So yeah.
Oh yeah, there's always somebody out there who wants something, you know, even if it's like stuff that you're doing on your own, I found, you know. What's the most unique thing somebody's requested from you?
Oh my God. Sometimes I can't really repeat it. But
You
like,
know what? I've heard, you know what? I should rephrase that question because that's definitely an answer I've heard before.
I see, like, the most unique thing is, someone wanted me to do Let's see. Mr. Miracle and Big Barda.
Okay.
And but that's they didn't really tell me to do anything weird with that, but I thought, like, okay, I didn't know the characters very well, you know. And it was this before, like, you know, Mitch Gerads and did his wonderful run on that, you know, and it was such a visible thing, you know. And so I thought, okay, well, I also like other kinds of art too, so why don't I do them in the style of a Rodin sculpture? You know, like, there's a Rodin sculpture called The Kiss, you know, where it's just this beautiful romantic encapsulation of what a kiss is, you know, but it's very figurative. And I thought, okay, so let's base, you know, those two characters on these two figures in the statue. And, you know, it's like, I think it's also emblematic of those characters' relationship too, you know. So I would kind of turn it into a unique thing, you know, only because, like, I can't do things like, you know, these beautiful detailed things like, you know, for instance, Clay Mann, you know, I can't do things, you know, that beautiful and detailed, you know, but I always go back to Arkham Asylum, where I'm like, you know, what made me think this is interesting is because, and I thought, like, well, there's, you know, there's all these textures and cool things, but it made me think about the characters in a different way. So how do I do that? You know, how do I do something that makes, you know, the characters look like, you know, something you wouldn't expect, but also something that makes sense for who they are, you know? And sometimes I'll just say, like, oh, Wolverine, cool picture of Wolverine. Yeah. Sometimes all you need to do.
But yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think one person wanted me to do the entire cast of the Endless as sketch cards, you know, so they could frame them all together. And I thought, oh boy. And I didn't know who all the Endless were at the time, you know, after the Sandman series, I do, you know, but, nothing really too weird or interesting, you know, like, I think someone wanted me to do, there's been some obscure characters, Alpha Dog and Strontium Dog and I'm blanking on the character name. I'm so sorry. The characters from Strontium Dog, Johnny Alpha. That's who it
there
is.
You
Johnny Alpha. And so I had to research these characters, and I thought, these are, you know, so it's actually made me want to, you know, find out more cool characters. It's expanded my horizons just by trying to figure out who these characters are, you know. That's a long way of saying, like, probably Big Bart and Mr. Miracle kissing. So.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to ask you a couple more things, and then I'll let you get out of here. Well, this one, I want to hear, you touched on this very briefly before, and you mentioned it before we started. Can you share that Dave McKean story that you alluded to?
I sure can.
Please do.
This was San Diego Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con 2008. This was the year that I, 2007. This was the summer before I moved away from Las Vegas. But I knew I was going to go into comics. And so I had my portfolio there with me and stuff. And my best friend, Andy, who was also a teacher, who also was encouraging me to draw comics. Like, he was an English teacher, and his journals were like these beautiful sketchbook diaries. And that actually inspired me to start my sketchbook a day thing, was what he was doing. He was an English teacher, but he went with me to San Diego Comic-Con. We're wandering around on Sunday, you know, and I'm taking pictures of, like, people dressed as like Darth Vader and stuff like that, you know, and everything like that. And we walk by this table, and I don't know how my friend recognized Dave McKean, because he didn't know who he was. But there's Dave McKean sitting at a table signing stuff. And my friend Andy turns to me and goes, "Hey, isn't that the dude that you worship?" And I'm like, "I think it is." And he's like, but I had no more money. I'm like, I don't have any more money for his books, you know. And my friend Andy was like, "Here's the money. Go buy a book. Go get it signed." And I'm like, okay. And so, I went over to his table. My friend Andy, who knew how nerdy I could get with things, or how easy it is for me to nerd out, was with me just as my translator, as it were.
Yeah.
And so I go up to Dave McKean, and he had this little postcard book that he had drawn, and I forget what it was called, but it was just this little square book for like $15. And I Dave McKean, who was very sweet, and I apologize for butchering his accent, but he's like, "Hello, how are you?" And I'm like, I like your comics, is what I said. He's like, let me just sign that for you. And I'm like, I didn't even say a word. I just nodded. And I slid the book over to him. And he's, you know, he's like, how do you spell your name? I'm like, and my friend Andy was like, his name is Patrick without a K. And he's like, oh. So he's like drawing this little cool cat person in the book, you know, and everything like that. And I was like, I got to tell him something. And so I blurt out of an apropos of nothing. And I say, Dave, I want you to know that I sleep with a copy of Arkham Asylum under my pillow every night. You make me want to be a comic book artist. And he goes, oh, really? Security, security. And my friend Andy was like, he doesn't get out very much. And I go, I really don't. I have nothing else. And I go and I leave. And he's like, thank you. And the yellow shirt people came in and kind of stared at me a little bit. And I was like, okay. And I walked away. And I was like, boy, I'm glad he didn't press charges.
Wow.
That was just weird, you know, to him, you know. And again, the nicest guy around, but I'm just like this, you know, my friend Andy's like 6'4" and I'm like 6'2", and there's these two dudes just like staring at him and telling him that he's looking at his pillow. What is he going to say? You know? And so that was the first and only time I met Dave McKean. He won't return my friend request for some reason. I'm kidding. but he was very sweet and he handled it very well. And I was weird. Let's put it that way. So,
that's a great story. I feel like also that probably was his, I don't want to say knee jerk reaction, but that was probably from Sandman fame. As soon as that red flag goes up, he's like, listen, I need some help here. Come here. You know, because he's probably been in situations with Sandman fans that are like, oh, not only do I sleep with your books underneath my bed, there's several guns underneath that pillow too. You know what I mean? Or something like that, you know, but that's such a great story. And plus, you know, like, I feel like those days are like, you know, not to sound like I'm, you know, like I'm 41, not to sound like an older man. Yeah. Or an old man, but like I feel like those days of being able to like, hey, sign my book or maybe do a little something in there are a little bit long gone, you know, because I used to like same thing, like I used to walk around with a sketchbook and just politely, like very politely ask folks like from like almost like 20 years ago, say like, hey, would you mind doing like a little thing? Oh yeah, no problem. And it was just like free of charge, you know what I mean, like thank you very much. And like, you can't do that now. And that's like, I feel like probably one of the last times that guy has ever like done something like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like when people do, like when I first started going to conventions, I would do that for people happily, you know? Yeah, but like my problem was that I would spend so much time on it that I, you know, need to probably start asking money for it. And I still don't. I mean, like, I know I was like, okay, I could tell them that I could just I've learned to better like just do a sketch and not like a sketch, you know. The crafty thing is though they'll do like a book, they'll hand you a book sometimes and you'll see like a Mike Mignola sketch, you'll see a Bill Sienkiewicz sketch, you'll see like, you know, a Mark Silvestri sketch. You're like, I'm not gonna do a bad sketch and be next to Mark Silvestri, you know. And so like it's
that
a
was
really
my move.
Motivator. You're like, oh hell, I'm gonna show up Bill Sienkiewicz, you know. I mean, like, I'm not gonna do just like, you know, a stick figure with like, you know, with like a with like devil horns. No, I'm gonna draw Hellboy. You know,
right.
Like, so it's kind of a thing where like, you know, I don't, you know, of course I'm sure it's not intentional, but like if you it's being next to other artists, it immediately triggers imposter syndrome. And it's immediately like, well, let me show you what I can do, you know, for free and everything.
That's so funny too. It's like, when I still have that sketchbook, I love it. It's like one of my prized possessions. Yeah. And like the one sketch that did that for every artist that I had put in that book after was Charlie Adler during the Walking Dead stuff. He did a colored Rick for me. And like colored it, he was like, oh, I just got these new markers, I can't do his accent, but he's, you know, I just got these new markers, I'm gonna do a colored version if that's okay. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. When whoever saw that sketch after that was like, oh, Charlie did he did a colored Rick Grimes for you, give me 1 second. And it would just be like these beautiful works of art, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I've been that guy. Been that
pretty crappy, you know. I applaud it. You know, I'm like, okay, there's no better way to motivate an artist is to show him all the other cool stuff other artists have done.
Well, there's also that curiosity, right? There's that Pandora's box of like, oh, cool, you got a sketchbook. Let me see what's here. Oh, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've I'm both a fan and an artist, so I get it. Yeah. You know, like I want to have like Jason Sean Alexander, you know, draw something for me, you know, even though we've now worked together on Nita Hosnacker blog, and you know, or have Bill Sienkiewicz draw something for me, you know.
Yeah.
I would love, I mean, I, you know, even though like I wouldn't even call him my peer, you know, I would just say, you know, I'm still like that, to that point where I revere other artists, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like, of course, I'm still in that Dave McKean fanboy phase where I'm like, oh God, it's, you know, before I'm like, oh God, it's Mike Mignola. Even my work with Mike Mignola, I still nerd out on him. You know? And Mike, I think, has learned to like deal with me a little bit. I do have a funny Mike Mignola story too. Like he, we were in Emerald City 1 year, and this was like 2014, I think. And Mike Mignola's wife, Christine, is super nice. She wanted to take everybody who's worked on Mike Mignola stuff out to dinner, a nice dinner in Seattle, you know, as a thank you. And I was sitting right across from Dave Stewart and right next to Mike Mignola and right across from Tim Sale and Tyler Crook was there too. You know, and I was just sort of like trying not to like do the nerd boy thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and Mike was just talking about like Neanderthals or something like that, you know, and then he talked about how he almost died in 1983. And I go like, he almost died in 1983. And he goes, whatever, Reynolds, were you even born yet? And I go like, yeah, I'm actually 65 years old. It's really weird. And he's like, really? And I'm like, no, fine. But I had a pieing contest with Dave Stewart and I lost, you know, but like it was, it's everybody's still a person, you know.
Yeah.
I've noticed we're all someone told me once we're all just sort of, you know, fans making comics, right? Yeah. So I just think it's really cool that I can have a pieing contest with Dave Stewart, you know, and then I can high five, you know. I've not met Christian Ward in person yet, you know, we're trying to figure that out.
Wow.
You know, we Zoom a lot, you know, but we have not met in person, you know, like yeah. He would tell me, he's like, dude, when we go to a convention together, we're going to hug the shit out of each other. And like, you bet we're going to do it, you know, but we're at the end of the day, we still like talk about, you know, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, you know, like, he's like, that's one of my favorite movies. I'm like, yeah, me too. We both like similar movies, you know, we both talk about cool things that, you know, motivate us. And, you know, there's a lot of similar things, you know, because at the end of the day, we're all just sort of making our own cool thing that hopefully people will like.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Man. That's such a great, it's refreshing to hear that. Cause it's such a great attitude to have, especially somebody who's in the comic book business. Cause like, it's either, I feel like sometimes it's either, or either somebody's going to be super enthused and really happy with their career path, or it's going to be the bitter guy. And, you know, I don't want to talk to the bitter guy.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, I've been bitter too, you know, a little bit, but then I'm like, you know, and it's, I need to be reminded sometimes, you know, like, that at the end of the day, really, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else, and I am glad I'm here, you know, and, now the work comes now where I got to figure out how to like, not destroy myself while making these things, you know, that's the thing I'm most worried about now. You know, I'm lucky enough to work on, you know, to talk to Christian Ward about anything at any time I want now, and have a foot in the door with DC Comics for the next thing, you know, whenever that may be. You know, so I don't have to worry about getting work anymore. It's now about managing my life. And so it's interesting where, you know, I've been drawing comics for 13 years now, you know, and it's never really been one. It's never just been that job where I go to every day and I can leave it alone. It's a creature, you know, the job is a character in and of itself, you know, like backgrounds are Heather Moore's colors.
I love it. Thank you again for doing this. But before I let you go, what's your favorite sandwich, Patrick?
Oh my God, I'm in Portland. There's a lot of great sandwiches in here, but I would go with a vinaigrette caprese sandwich with vinaigrette caprese cheese. Vegan caprese cheese, although I'm not vegan. I like that cheese that's just on the edge of liquefied,
Like
get that cheese loose kind of thing. So basically, it's a really fancy grilled cheese sandwich, but with like vinaigrette, tomatoes, and a little bit of basil on it. Oh my gosh, that's a spiritual experience. Woo!
What kind of bread?
I don't think it even needs bread. It can be on a coaster for all I care, but like is it sourdough? I think they put it on.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, there's a it's hard to pick just one here. I like sandwiches with names like the Steve Martin or the Viking or the Balrog. Deep fried everything with just a brick of meat in it, something,
Oh man. I'm terrified of going to Portland. I've never visited Portland. I'm terrified of going because I know so many people that live there, and every single one of them says, you would love it here. And I
Yeah,
feel like if I
you would.
went, I'd probably drink the Kool-Aid and be like, do you want to move? I'll tell my wife, do you want, like, she can do her job from anywhere. I can do my job from anywhere, maybe Portland. So I'm like a little scared to go to Portland. And everybody tells me the food's awesome.
It is. I don't know how they do it, but the best southern food I've ever had is in Portland. I'm sorry, I went
Wow.
to Savannah, and I'm kind of expecting like Paula Deen to burst through my door, like throw a go, let me tell you about a donut sandwich. And I'm like, okay, but yeah, Portland knows their food, man. I don't know how or why, but jeez, it is the Graceland of food here, man. I don't know
Wow.
why, but
That's
it is.
high praise. That is high praise.
Always impressive. Yes.
Awesome, man. All right, Patrick, where could everybody find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is just my name. It's Patrick_Reynolds on Instagram, or Patrick J. Reynolds. But yeah, if you just my name is Patrick without a K. You type in Patrick Reynolds without a K, you're gonna find me on Instagram and Twitter Instagram and Twitter very easily. I'm also on comicarthouse.com, but again, my name's up there, and I have a website, www.murderinginc.com, and that's my own personal website, so you can check that out if you need to. I'm updating it now with new work and everything now, so check it out. Let me know what you think.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rich. Thank you so much.
I can't thank Patrick enough for doing the interview, and I know he's going to blow up even more with whatever he does next. Quite a talented guy. It was truly a pleasure to talk with him. Listen, go get Bloodstained Teeth. We mentioned the creative team during the episode, but Christian Ward, Heather Moore, Patrick Reynolds, Hassan Osman El Hao, I hope I said that right. They deserve all the flowers. Really, truly great book. Stay tuned for our next episode where I talk to DB Andre about his writing and End After End out from Vault Comics. I'll see you soon, my babies. Mwah. Bye.